This is the Next Bite of Life podcast, the place to be to hear personal stories from expats, digital nomads, and everybody else taking their next bite of life. Thank you for joining me once again on this episode of the Next Bite of Life podcast. My name is Kem Kem, as you know. My guest today is the author, Ian Pilbom. And he's here to tell me all about his gap year with his family. So say hello to everyone, Ian.
Hey, good to see you, Kem Kem. And hi, everybody. Hope you're all well.
I think everything is fine. And I'm so glad you were able to make it today. So tell me, I know that it said, you know, I was written up a little bit about you. And it said you're from Boston. Now, are you from Boston proper? Or did you grow up and then move to England?
Okay, this accent will give you a clue that I'm not from Massachusetts. So what most Americans don't realize is that there is a Boston in England, in a county called Lincolnshire, which is where the Pilgrim Fathers sailed from.
Imagine that.
It is therefore the original Boston and the Boston after which Boston, Mass is named. So I am from Boston, Lincolnshire, not Boston, Mass.
I must beg for my ignorance because I was actually born in West Africa and went to school in Boston later on. So I didn't have history or anything like that. So I didn't know that there was another one. But, you know, this is actually the very first time I'm hearing about that. I didn't know that. You know, I've heard of the places, Oxford and blah, 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 you know, where you know it's from there, but this is cool. So yeah. Tell me, Ian, was your love for traveling, was it born, you know, right from the beginning, or was it something that slowly built up over time?
I think the seeds were there from early days because I migrated towards languages at school and university. So academically, that's where I went. In fact, Kem, you're in Valencia, and the first flight I ever took in my life was at the age of 17 to Valencia.
Oh, wow.
What are the chances?
So you must like my background, right?
Absolutely. I know exactly where you were.
Oh, that is so funny.
Although, to be fair, that was at the age of 17. So I don't think we're, you know, so many of the modern Valencian buildings weren't around back
true.
Then. Yeah. it looked rather different. So I did a little bit of kind of student travel, but very much on the doorstep, France, Spain. And then when I met my future wife, we slowly uncovered a passion for more interesting travel. And we kind of picked away at that over the years. And then suddenly, as I'm sure we'll go on to talk about with the book, it exploded.
Wow.
And we went a bit crazy.
So is she British as well, or is she from a...
My wife's Scottish.
Oh, so, okay. Yeah. You know, you live like in Edinburgh, right? Which is like one of my dream cities to leave. I was so excited when I finally visited there and I thought, oh, I could live here. I didn't realize it was that. I'd heard it was so beautiful. It was really nice. But I'm like, I'm sure like Glasgow much better, which I did like it, but I was really shocked. And I wish I'd flipped it around and spent more time in Edinburgh than I did in Glasgow, looking back now. So you were living in Edinburgh when you started your travels, or you were living in England then?
Yeah, so I met my wife in England, but we have been in Edinburgh or near Edinburgh for the past 20 years.
Nice.
So yes, so that's where most of our travels have come from. We tend to joke that the place in Scotland that we go to the most is Edinburgh Airport. Which is criminal because Scotland is a beautiful country, stunning country, and everybody should come.
No, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I say we don't necessarily always appreciate what's on our doorstep.
That's exactly.
And that's I think, an important lesson for every traveler. Do travel, but also enjoy where you are as well.
Exactly.
And, you know, one of the joys of this dreadful last year that we've had right around the world has actually been able to enjoy where I live now.
Yes.
Because you say Edinburgh is stunning.
Yeah. So now tell me, when you started thinking about traveling around the world, because I know I read a little bit of excerpt from the book and I saw like how you asked your kids. So you were traveling with not just you, by this point, when you decided to take off, it was you, your wife, and two kids. How old were they?
That's right.
How old were they?
They were, when we left to go around the world, they were 8 and 10. And then obviously 9 and 11 when we came back a year later.
Yeah. So now the pandemic allowed you to actually finally sit down and write about it, huh?
Yes. My work life's been actually really busy in the last year. So I didn't have extra time to do this, but I decided that I'd put it off for too long and I was just going to do it. So I made the time, found the time, and of course realized as I wrote it that not only was I going around the world again with my kids and revisiting it, which was a joy, but actually I was writing something that would allow other people to go around the world at a time when they can't.
Yes.
and that's been part of the feedback, is people are just loving being able to travel with us,
yeah,
through the book.
That's fantastic.
At a time when they can't otherwise. Yeah.
That's great. Now, walk me through this. When you started thinking about it, I know that they were young, but when she was pregnant and, you know, before they were even born and you were doing all the traveling, did you one day envision being able to travel with your kids for that long?
No.
Okay, good.
Who would? Yeah, no, it was not. I know families who plan to do this, and they maybe plan for 3-5 years to do it. It didn't happen like that for us. It was almost spontaneous. So, as you say, the excerpt's available on Amazon, I guess. But the story was that we were on a fairly traditional holiday. It was Southern Turkey, package holiday type thing. And I said to the kids one night, where do you want to go traveling next? Where do you want to go on holiday next? And they said, can we have a think about it and come back to you? It's a bit cheeky.
Yeah.
Hey, the next night they came with a piece of paper and on it was a list of about 10 countries. And each one had the name of the country and an animal next to it. So, you know, because these are 7 and 9 year old kids. Kids love animals, don't they?
Of course.
You know, so it's Australia kangaroos, Peru llamas, Madagascar lemurs, China panda bears, Africa lions, that sort of thing.
Who was that? Yeah.
And it just at that moment, we just went, wow, we fancy that as well. We never did that backpacker thing when we were young, either my wife or I. I wonder if you can do it as a family. So we asked that bloke called Mr. Google.
Yes.
And seems to know quite a lot. And you could. And within 3 weeks of getting back from that holiday, I was negotiating my exit from a job I loved, you know, a well-paid, permanent, secure job. Yeah. This is late 2007. When the world was safe and
yeah.
secure, and there wasn't a global crash on the way.
Mm-hmm.
We then completed the school year. So we then took the best part of a year before we actually went.
Okay.
But the decision itself was fairly, fairly spontaneous.
Wow. Were you terrified at all, especially when it got closer to the time to leave? Because now it's 2008.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, so we're starting to hear of organisations like Lehman Brothers that
yes.
maybe I wasn't aware of before. So there was that aspect.
Yeah.
And we certainly, you know, we watched the world financially collapse around
yes.
us.
Yes.
You know, and I talk about that in the book and some of the challenges that gave us. So there was that. And then, of course, there's just the whole weight of responsibility of taking your two kids around the world for a year. And we, you know, I'd worked very hard at planning a route that would, you say routes, don't you?
Route, yes.
So, yeah.
I knew what you meant.
I'm gonna keep it as routes, right? So I'd planned a route that was family friendly. So we were trying to avoid extreme climate. So if somewhere had a monsoon at a time of year, we didn't go at that time of year. We were trying to go to countries that we thought would be interesting for the kids. Because if they're happy, then we're happy. If they're not happy, we're definitely not.
Yes.
Especially for a year. But also, I was looking at security as well and how we keep them safe. And 6 weeks before we left, I had to change the route because there was a really bad earthquake in China near Chengdu. And Chengdu was the place, it's in the Sichuan province, and Chengdu was the place where the panda sanctuary is.
Oh.
Right, where pandas are born and you go and see these cute little panda cubs. Oh. And obviously that was on the list. Mm-hmm. So we had to scrap that. So I suppose that brought home to me at that point that there are risks in what we are doing.
Yeah.
And there was that kind of gulp and, well, we're doing it, so we better just get on with it and enjoy it and hope everybody comes back at the end of it.
Exactly. They did. Now, I know, like, the circumstances that actually brought that about were a little bit sad. So, you know, you had your in-laws who, unfortunately, you know, something happened, and, you know, it's just amazing to me, you know. Part of my journey started because my sister passed away. There's always something. We always tend to, like, finally do things while, you know, it's not too late, but, you know, you do it because you're spurred on by something. And I love the fact that you actually made the decision and you did it, because a lot of people will still talk about it. And in the end, you know, they just don't end up doing anything. So did people tell you you were crazy when you started talking about doing it?
Yes. So just to finish off your point, because I think it's an important point. You know, I've come to the view that, you know, I've written a book, but I've come to the view that life is a book. And it's up to you how many chapters are in it and how interesting each chapter is. And when something happens that's tragic or sad or difficult in your life, you have a choice whether to stay in that chapter or to turn it into the next chapter, to use it as a punctuation point and a point to leverage off and do something different. And that's what we did and what you've done. And, you know, I think the people who end up with the most interesting life books, they've done that. Yes. They've got that kind of mindset. So I think that's an important lesson for life. In terms of, did people think we're crazy? Yes, I think many people still do.
Even if they don't tell you to your face, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. But nobody says it to your face. But it's not for everybody. Yeah. Right? You're traveling with your kids is, even for 2 weeks, you know, most people come back from 2 weeks holiday with their kids and go, can we now go on holiday without them, please?
Exactly.
So what we did was our life for a year. It wasn't a holiday.
Yeah.
Very, very different from holiday.
How was it now? There were, you know, young children. How was it homeschooling them? Was it something that was really easy? Was it something that was hard? You know, how was it?
Oh, it was easy. Really easy. the world was the classroom. You know, that chat we were just having about Boston, right? You know, it didn't just world school them, it world schooled me as well. Because, you know, I grew up with a very Western European, Anglo-centric, post-colonial education on the world. And actually, we spent 6 months of the year, we spent most of the year in the other hemisphere, but we spent 6 months of the year around the Pacific Rim.
Nice.
And seeing the world from an entirely different angle was so educational.
Wow.
So the more I learned, the more I could explain to them. And, you know, really seeing the colonial legacy still playing out. And of course, it still is. But seeing it in real time, in person, was brilliant for all of us.
Yes, especially.
And I'm sure and change their perspective. So they look, you know, they were a great age. So they could read, they could write.
Yeah. And they could,
yeah, they got basic, they got basic,
they could remember.
yeah, and they could remember, absolutely. Yeah. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah, so no, their daily diaries, that was homework, really. They were learning to write. Some of their best diary excerpts are actually in the book because they're so good.
Okay, good. Because I'm like, yeah, you could turn that into another little book, you
know? Yeah, yeah. No, they wrote wonderfully well at times. Wow. My son, Rory, he was responsible for adding up how much we were spending each day and then totaling it at the end of the day so I could put it into the budget spreadsheet. Gotcha. And some days he would say, sorry, Dad, you can't have a beer tonight because we spent today's allowance.
So he was a taskmaster. Good for him.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So he learned that skill.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's great.
And then we went to places that were impactful for them. So, for example, in the year after we got back, my son's class was doing a project on World War II. And they were asked to go into small groups to prepare a presentation on a topic of their choice. And Rory formed a group of one because he wanted to do a presentation about Hiroshima, because we'd been. Yeah. And it had such an impact on him. So that's what he did.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, that's great. That sets him apart.
Exactly. That's great. You know, homeschooling. Yeah. World schooling. Yeah.
World schooling, completely world schooling. Yeah. And really, really easy. I think if they'd been teenagers and they were following a curriculum, maybe it'd be harder.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at the age they were at, you know, our only challenge was this was a pre-Kindle age. Just. We were about a year too early for Kindles. Yeah. So our challenge was reading materials.
Because you can't carry those heavy things around, right?
Exactly. It's the same with guidebooks. I mean, guidebooks, we were buying them as we went.
Yeah.
If we could. And there were a couple of countries we did without guidebooks because I just couldn't source them.
Wow.
Japan was an example. I couldn't source an English Japan Lonely Planet in China. That's true. So we did Japan without a guidebook.
Wow, that is great. So, I mean, the kids, it must have been such an adventure for them because, you know, everything is completely new. And especially when there's no guidebook, everything is a new discovery. So that brings me to the point, why is the title, Are We There Yet? Because it seems like, you know, it would be like, oh, yeah, we're there. But why is it, Are We There Yet?
Yeah, I'll be there. Well, of course, that's what kids say on journeys from the back of the car, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a classic childhood saying. And as soon as it was suggested to me, because actually someone suggested it to me, I was going to call it something else. But you ask people, of course, and you get ideas.
Oh, yeah.
And I just went, are we there yet? Well, that sounds like a family travel story.
Yes.
But also the subtitle is the year-long adventure that kept on giving. Okay. So this is not a story that ends on the day that we landed back in the UK. There's a whole chapter at the end about what happened afterwards.
Afterwards.
Because once you've done this, it changes you forever.
Oh, that's great. You need to send me a copy of this book. Sure. Well, I'll buy it on Amazon
on Amazon.
Yeah, it's on Amazon, everybody. It's called Are We There Yet? You don't happen to have a copy that you could show us, do you?
Let me just shuffle around. I should have had it
in my hand.
There we go. Are we there yet?
Okay. The book is called
A Year-Long Adventure That Kept On Giving.
Yeah.
And it does. It keeps on giving in all sorts of ways.
That's great.
You know, I own a business that I wouldn't have probably taken the leap to do without the change in my attitude and the courage that came from travel. My son is now married and in Mexico. Got married in Mexico a month ago.
That's great. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Our daughter, at the age of 15, raised £2,000 to be able to do a voluntary project for a month in Ghana.
Oh, my God. 16. That's great.
Yeah. So these things wouldn't have happened if we did not have done the trip. I'm quite sure of it.
That is so one of the reasons why I started the podcast, you know, a lot of people were saying, yeah, you know, the same thing, you're crazy, why would you move from the US and blah, blah, blah. But I like showing and talking to people who actually have the courage to go out and do these things. Because like you just said, without having experienced that, you wouldn't have had the courage to go out and open a new business, do things. It really shows you that you're capable of doing things that you didn't even know you were capable of doing, right? It's just amazing.
I think people think, you know, and I see sometimes on social media, and if I had a newspaper article on social media, there have been a few of those recently, and the odd person will jump on and go, oh, it's all right for you with all your money, right?
It's always the number one thing they say. Yeah, it's because you had money.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're just an ordinary family, right? We're just an ordinary family. And I think we spent in that year what we would have spent at home. Okay. We rented out our house, so that was covered. And I think we spent the same. Now, we'd inherited some money, so we had it up front. But these days, there's so many jobs you can do as a digital nomad.
Yeah,
digital nomad didn't exist as a concept back then.
No, it did not.
Yeah. So it's possible for anybody, really. But we decided we wanted to make that happen. And when I said to my wife, Anne, shall we do this crazy thing? Praying she was going to say yes, but expecting her to say no. She said, sure, why not? What's the worst that can happen? What's the worst that can happen? We have to sell the house and downsize. Right? And when I decided 7 years ago, so 4 years after our trip, to quit my job and start my own business, we said, what's the worst that can happen? The business doesn't work out and I have to get another job. And I think, you know, it's not about being reckless. It's not about being extravagant. It's about being prepared to entertain new possibilities, working out if they're right for you, and then taking a deep breath and just doing it and seeing what happens.
That's excellent. Because really, when I hear people, and I do, like I show this on YouTube, for instance, and I get people emailing me and saying, well, you interviewed this person. Yeah, but they have money. I'm like, well, he told you he like got a job and you have to make things happen. But I think a lot of people expect, oh, I'll just sit here and the opportunities will come to me. Well, it doesn't work like that, you know? You're going to fail quite a few times. I mean, you look at Warren Buffett and all the other rich people, you know, it's not like they sat there and they were expecting something. So if you want to travel around the world for a year with your family, you can certainly do it. If you want to go by yourself, you can do it. There are other ways, and especially now, like pre-Google, for instance, or, you know, you couldn't do anything without your little guidebook or whatever. But now, really, you only have to Google like you did, and you'll find other people even along the way that you can count on for advice or, you know, so it's doable for most people. And I think like sometimes you just gotta stop the excuses and do it. And I'm so glad that you did it and did it with the kids. Now, did you pass on that love for travel to the kids? You know, apart from like, do they want to travel and do a gap year on their own or?
Oh, yeah. Once you get the travel bug, it doesn't leave you, I don't think. Not unless you have a really bad experience. I mean, our initial family holidays for the few years afterwards were a bit more traditional. We didn't do anything too exciting for a while. But then when it got to the point that they were able to start traveling on their own, they did.
Yeah.
So Rory did a summer in South Africa. He did a summer in the Philippines and India. And then he did a summer in Mexico where he met his future wife and Central America.
Yeah.
So, you know, he just...
Wow, definitely.
That's him. Runa, unfortunately, has been ill the last few years. So she has chronic fatigue, which she's now recovering from slowly. But there was a period when she was a bit better and she went off to Philippines. She went out and saw Rory in the Philippines, which is really sweet.
Wow, that's great.
And other bits of Southeast Asia as well. So And then Anne and I have been able to travel a bit more as well.
That's great. You know,
so we've been to the Baltics and Cuba and Vietnam and yeah, all sorts of places. So, yeah.
So, yeah, it doesn't leave you. Once you've got that taste for it, it's now in your blood firmly. Now, of all the places that you went to, which one would you say was your favorite country?
Yeah, so we all had different favorites. We all had different favorites. So very quickly, Runa's favorite was Madagascar. She loved Madagascar because of the lemurs, which is why she picked it for the animals, first place.
Yeah.
My wife Anne's favorite was Japan. Japan is just so quirky. It's that combination of ancient and modern, and it's unique. So she loved that. Rory's favorite was New Zealand. It was a little bit like Scotland. I think that helped.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I loved all of those, but my personal favorite was perhaps the country I was looking forward to the most, which was Peru. Now, I'd always wanted to go to Peru. Never thought I would, but it had been in my imagination since childhood because of reading those books about Paddington Bear and his great Aunt Lucy in Deepest, Darkest Peru. And I think that always just been in my mind and my imagination. So, and I knew we were going to be able to go to some amazing places and have some stunning experiences. So things like Machu Picchu and Lake Titicaca, I knew they'd be available. So I knew it was going to be good, but I loved it. Absolutely loved it. So vibrant, so exotic, so historic. Wow. It had everything. So loved it.
So wild. I hear really good things about Peru. I've never had the urge to go. I mean, like, I would go back to places I love. Like, I would go back to Japan. I would go back, but Peru, but, you know, the more I hear about it, everybody's like, really good. I'm like, yeah, Machu Picchu. But, you know, it's time to give it a second think, I guess.
Yeah, and it's as a backpacker or a traveler, it's relative, although it's a big country, but it's relatively easy to get around and do the things.
Yeah, that's true, right? You only have to worry about that. No checked luggage or anything. Now, after you went back home, was it really hard to adjust? Because really, a year is a long time away, especially when you've been to so many places. How was that like coming back home?
It was different for all of us. So Anne fortunately got a job the week after we got back, which saved us. So, you know, so her transition was bang straight into a new job and learning that. The kids in the summer holiday we got back just kind of disappeared into their friends' homes and just got on with being kids again.
Yes.
And school, I think it was a bit different for both of them. Rory went into a different class group than he'd left before. But really, they just got on with being kids again and almost normalizing with their peer groups, because we all want to belong when we're that age, I think. And the trip made them a bit different. So they almost disowned it for a while to be part of the gang again.
That makes sense.
So they were fine. It was different probably for me, because when we got back in the summer of 2009, not only was that lovely secure job that I'd had before not available, there were no jobs available.
Yeah.
So I didn't work for a year.
Oh, wow.
I didn't work for a year when we got back. And there were times when I thought, actually, have I sacrificed my career at the altar of travel? Yeah. And if I have, well, so be it, because it was still worth it.
No, good. I was going to ask you that. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. And I'm saying that probably with slightly rose-tinted spectacles with hindsight, because I'm sure there were days when I was just really really down. But what kept me going in part was, although we couldn't go back out into the world for a while, we started to have traveling families come and stay with us, either finding us online or through things like couch surfing. So that helped to keep it alive. So it was fine. And then, eventually I got a job and hated it. but then quit it and started the business. So it all worked out.
Amazing. Now, do you feel like, you know, this, you said it was worth it, obviously. What do you have to say to somebody who's sitting at home now saying, you know what, they did it, everyone was back there? What would be your advice to somebody who was contemplating doing that with family in tow?
Two pieces of advice. The first one is a question. Ask yourself, why do you want to do it? What is your why? Okay, we had a very, very clear why, which is we'd gone through this family tragedy. We'd been looking after my father-in-law with dementia who lived with us. And it got to the point where we couldn't leave him on his own. And therefore, we couldn't do those things that families do of, hey, let's go to the cinema today or let's go to the shops or whatever. We couldn't do that. And it impacted on our ability to function as a family. So we wanted, yes, we wanted to see exotic animals and go to amazing places. But fundamentally, we wanted to get our family time back. And that clarity helped us, particularly at times when things went wrong. So be really clear on why you want to do it, because it's not a holiday. If you think this is an extended holiday, it's not. So understand that. If you still want to do it, it's all in the preparation. Research, research, research.
Like that buy doesn't... like buy this book.
Yes. Yeah, buy Are We There Yet, for sure. But listen to podcasts. Just, you know, just lose yourself in Google, lose yourself in blogs. You know, I still do that when we go on holiday now. You know, I research, research, research. I mean, you know, I'm in the forum every day of wherever we're going. It does not mean that when we get there, I don't throw it all away and be spontaneous.
Yeah.
But it means I've got a frame of reference. I've understood the basics. I know where I'm going. And then I can then just float off that and do whatever we decide to do. And I think particularly if you're traveling with kids and you've got that responsibility of parental stewardship and making sure they're safe, you've got to do it. It's your duty to do that. But then just get out there in the world and have fun, enjoy it.
Yeah, you'll be always surprised.
That's why you're doing it,
right? That's great advice, because a lot of people need to hear this. Even after everything, there's always going to be something. And if you keep making excuses, then it's just never going to go away. You have to get to the point, like you say, figure out your why, and then do it and see. So do you foresee a time when it's going to be like grandpa, son, like a whole huge family thing, everybody going off on another gap year? Do you foresee that at all?
No way. No way. I guess a big family retreat. That's yeah, that
okay,
would be nice.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. But no, I think travel when it's more than two of you is intense.
Yeah.
Right. You know, we all need our personal space and our personal time. And Anne and I were able to give that to each other because, you know, you do the kids and I'm going to head off for a wander or vice versa. But apart from that, we were 24/7 parents for 52 weeks.
Yeah.
So it's intense.
Stressful.
Yeah. So I think for me, and it could be entirely different for other people, but I think actually long-term travel in small numbers is just easier. You're not having to compromise all the time. You're not having to worry about other people's feelings or other people's health or other people's budgets. You know, you can just do what you want to. And, you know, and Anne and I, we probably still make compromises sometimes on holiday or trips about, do you want to do this? You know, she gets motion sickness. So we maybe don't do all the boat rides that we might want to do. I probably get in the way of her doing other things that she wants to do. Yeah. But by and large, we fit together and it works.
Yeah, that's great.
Throw in another 8 or 10 people, even if they're your bloodline, I think it'd be a bit harder.
You'll come back as old as I am, right? Like,
yeah. But you know, I reserve the right to change my mind later in life.
Yeah, because you know, you never know who's listening and watching, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, one last question here. You know, did you guys like when? I assume you had some sort of budget for the whole trip. When you came back and you sussed it all out, did you see that you were within the budget you set for yourself? Did you overspend, or was it just, you know, how was that?
Yeah, so we had a budget. You're absolutely right. And that was on a spreadsheet, and it was developed by, once we'd got the route and we worked out how long we were going to spend in each country, it was literally just, what do we think we're going to spend per day in that country? Multiply it by the number of the days and bang, there's your budget. Have a contingency at the bottom. and it'll all be fine. And then put your daily spend into that spreadsheet and make sure you're on track. And 3 months, 2 or 3 months in, and I tell this story in the book, so I'll not spoil it.
Okay, cool.
For you, but basically I realized I'd made a big mistake. There was a miscalculation. And the contingency, right? And the contingency went.
Oh no.
Immediately, right?
Oh no.
So and then the book will explain how we reined some of that back in and whether we got to some of the places we couldn't now go to. But we knew that, so we knew where we were from that point all the way through. And as it got towards the end of the trip, the last thing we were going to do, which I'd imagined for a year, was we were going to take a helicopter ride over Christ the Redeemer in Rio de Janeiro. And we didn't do it because at that point, we worked out that was 11 weekly shots at the supermarket when we got home.
It's right? Like, ah, no.
Yeah, you know, and we've got a small amount of money left and I haven't got a job and Anne hasn't got a job.
Yeah.
And there's a global recession going on.
So yeah,
we were starting to think differently about money at that point. So we didn't run out, but we nearly did. And if we hadn't have had the good fortune that Anne got that job so quickly, I guess we might have had to sell the house and downsize. Who knows? But yeah, being aware of it, knowing the final, the final chapter of the book proper is me talking about what happened in the death when we got home in the decade since. There's also a bonus chapter, and the bonus chapter will be interesting for anybody that works in business or runs a business, because I summarize the lessons we learned whilst traveling and how I've applied them to growing a business.
Nice.
And a key one is know your numbers. Mm-hmm. Know your numbers. So, yeah. You know, that was so important. And yeah, I nearly learned that a very, very hard way.
But it worked out for the best. So that's good. Ian, thank you so much for joining me. Once again, everybody, the book is called Are We There Yet? Can you hold it up for me one last time? And
sure.
The reviews are excellent. It's available on Amazon and on the blog post that goes with this on nextbiteoflife.com. You'll have the link to the book on Amazon too. And you can also check out this video on YouTube, as well as listen to the podcast on, you know, Spotify and all the other usual Apple podcasts and all the other stuff. So thank you once again, Ian. It was wonderful talking to you. And everybody, please go ahead and buy this book, because I think it's really good to see how somebody who's done it before you did it and how you can do it as well. So any last words, Ian?
It's been a joy to talk to you. Thank you. I would love if you and other people would like to connect with me on Instagram. That would be fantastic. So at Original Family Trippers. Ah. At Original Family Trippers. And yeah, absolutely. Or someone else came along and just called themselves Family Trippers, which, so we called ourselves Family Trippers for the year. So I should explain that. That was, we gave ourselves that identity. So I was Papa Tripper and Anne was Mama Tripper, etc.
Ah, gotcha.
So yeah, so I stick a travel photo on there every day from our family travels. I've got 15,000 to choose from. So we'll not run out anytime soon. So yeah, be great to see people there. And yeah, just the world is coming back. It might take a little bit longer than we hope, but the places that we love will have benefited, the natural world that we love will have benefited from having had a breather for the last year or so. The people who live in those places will be desperate for us to come back, because they'll need it.
Yes.
So, you know, let's get back out in the world as soon as we can.
Yes.
There's plenty more to discover and enjoy.
Yes.
And, you know, we live on a beautiful planet. Make the most of it, folks.
Thank you. Enjoy. So much, Ian. Wise words. I'm so glad that you were on today. And in the meantime, before we can all travel again, please, you know, check out his book called Are We There Yet? And see what it has to offer you. So thank you once again for joining me in this. Don't forget to subscribe to the show. And we'll see you on the next episode. Bye.